If you could start with roll call.
Okay, we will call the Economic Development Commission meeting of April 5th, 2023 to order. It is 6:05. Roll call. Member Brangle? Member Chapunkar? Yes. Member Graham?
Present.
Member Lowe's? Yes. Member Preston?
Present.
Member Walfelt? Present. And Chairman Brown?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Matt, you mentioned that there was might be public comments.
Correct. Yes, we have quite a few signed in, and then I also have a few emails to read into the record as well.
How do you want to go about that? Do you want to do emails first, or have those?
We'll just do in the room first. That's our typical process for that.
Sounds good.
Margaret Daly, did you want to speak public? Speaking the mic on the podium, just for those on the Zoom call, I appreciate it.
Yeah, those traffic barriers, I am against them. We've lived at the corner of Greenfield and Williams for 25 years. We raised our kids there. I've been aware over time that sometimes people speed down that street, and I've been known to yell at them when from my lawn when I think that they're driving dangerously. And so I care about the safety of the community. I care about the safety of the kids. But in all of the years that I have lived here, I have never seen a traffic pattern which would justify closing down the access to that corner of the village, which is essentially what this proposal is doing. The current proposal effectively would take our end of town and put in it, basically turn it into an impenetrable fortress. And it's so unnecessary. How on earth did we get from complaints from a handful of people to battening down the hatches at our corner of the village as if it's Fort Knox? We do not need to go from zero to 100 when so many other less draconian options are available. When we moved in 25 years ago, there were accidents fairly regularly at our corner, and there was no stop sign, and there was a big bush evergreens that were there that were hard to see. We cut down the evergreens. It stopped the accidents. Since then, we've had a two-way stop sign put in. Now there's a four-way stop sign put in. That has slowed down traffic significantly. And honestly, I am very much in favor of that. But we have no need of completely cutting off the access to that corner. There are many other ways that I've heard, such as making the Y-shaped barrier so you can still turn, if you're going south, you can still turn right into those streets. That makes sense to me. But turning that entire corner into an impenetrable fortress makes no sense. And right now, it would require me to go a whole half mile out of my way just to get to my house. And that says nothing about the poor businesses that are being affected there. Dr. Politis, Mint Dental, all of them are being cut off from their patients. What on earth is justifying that? I don't understand why we're going from nothing to the most, you know, the most draconian type of traffic management possible.
Well, thank you. Sorry, I thought you were finished. I apologize. Continue.
Yeah, sorry. I just had one other thing. I'd like to put in the record my objection to the traffic stops that were done at that location. There was a ticket trap that was set up by the police department at that location when the temporary barriers were there. I was out of town for much of the winter and was unaware these barriers had been put in place. I was driving south on Harlem, turned in before I even saw the sign or the sort of impermanent stuff that's been put up right there. And I was given a $200 traffic ticket. I asked the police officer why he didn't give me a warning since the barriers looked impermanent. And he told me that the people that got the barriers put up were complaining it wasn't being enforced. So he was told to park his car there day after day after day and issue tickets without exception. Now, I don't understand why that particular issue, particularly when it's these are new barriers that are set up that people aren't used to, why that was the most urgent public safety problem in the village, necessitating such an extravagant expenditure of police resources. The vast majority of my neighbors do not want the castle walls that the village seems intent upon constructing, and I urge the board to listen to the community and reject or significantly modify the proposal. Now I'm done.
Thanks. And wow, you know, I miss a meeting, and I see that there's so many people here. And I'm sorry not to be there. I should make note that this is the Economic Development Committee. And we talk about things of different developments in the area, things of that nature, how we can spur local businesses, you know, how we can help them, things of that nature. We have no jurisdiction into the safety or any of the traffic signals or any of the stoplights, any of the tickets, any of the things that you mentioned there. I just want to make sure that so that you know that there are other committees that meet involving that. And their times are posted on the Village of River Forest website. So we have really no jurisdiction over the items you mentioned, outside of the fact that it's somewhat impactful for the businesses in that area. And we will make note of that. I don't disagree. And we're doing everything we can to help the businesses, especially along North Avenue. Some of the things that we're going over tonight, for instance, should involve that. So please stick around. I just want to make sure that everyone, yourself and everyone else that's in the meeting is aware of that.
What
our jurisdiction here at this committee is, we've been asked to do.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
And if I could just add to that, thank you, Chairman Brown. On Monday night, the Village Board will be considering the latest recommendation from the Traffic Safety Commission about modifying those existing barriers, specifically the barriers at Lemoyne and Harlem and Greenfield in Harlem to allow southbound Harlem traffic to turn right onto those two roads. That was a recommendation from the Traffic Safety Commission at its March meeting. So the Village Board will be considering that action and discussing the barriers at the Monday night meeting. Tonight, the mention of the North Avenue corridor is a discussion of the zoning, of making changes to the zoning code relevant to the North and Madison Street corridor. Certainly, anyone who wants to speak about the barriers is still welcome to. It's public comment and it affects businesses. But I just want to set expectations that the zoning discussion that is taking place tonight is not specific to those barriers that are up in the northeast corner of town.
Thanks, Matt. Any other public comments?
Yes, there are. There's a Frank Libby. Renee Duba.
Hey, Duba. I live on the zero block of Franklin, and I'm going to talk about the Madison Street development and specifically going to be considering, and I'm going to give my personal comments first, and then I'm going to jump into a telephone booth and come back and represent a small group of neighbors to read a letter that the Lathrop, Ashland, and Franklin group organization wrote. I'm very excited about the prospects of a new and refreshed area along Madison Street in my neighborhood. However, I hope we can encourage you to think outside of the 4 or 5 story multifamily box that appears to be under consideration. Attracting a developer is not going to get any easier for a lot of reasons beyond the zoning code and the parcel dimensions, economic conditions, and declining access to capital is going to play a central role in slowing development activity. Opportunistic and value-add projects are probably going to be more attractive than development for maybe years. And so I think we will have to work harder and smarter to find the right developer and the right project. I understand that a mixed-use multifamily building with more units is more profitable. To make the math work for the developer, the solution has been to add more floors. As such, you're going to be asked to consider changing the zoning code, and as suggested, to attract a developer to build this mixed-use family, multifamily building that will accommodate more floors and more units to make the math work for them. I'm unaware of the process that led you to envision such a development for those parcels, so I remain pretty unconvinced that it's the best solution. I hope to be convinced otherwise. The suggested zoning changes imply that a low-rise project or something entirely different or something of smaller scale will not attract anyone. And to imagine something more different on these parcels, perhaps something that might generate less revenue but add value in other ways. For example, consider this as an opportunity to build a showcase piece for the village, one that could emphasize ESG initiatives, which could include on-site renewable energy sources, technology that reduces energy consumption to combat pollution, lean into the fact that this property has several public transportation options nearby, improving social mobility, justice, and enhancing equity and diversity in our community. Consider project design and construction by minority talent and the minority-owned firms exclusively. In addition to clearing these buildings on the parcels, you guys could take better care of Madison Street in general. So all those newish planter boxes are filled with nothing. And the landscape median holding the broken dead remains of half a dozen trees, you can't help, you know, coming away from that, getting the idea that River Forest doesn't care too much about this part of town. The village has turned a beautification project into blight. And if I can see it, potential developers can see it. I hope you will expand your thinking around the possibilities for the parcels along Madison Street to lower your revenue expectations and allocate TIF subsidies in favor of a community-friendly development project that would achieve other valuable goals and would become a source of not only revenue, new revenue on a parcel formerly tax exempt, but a great pride for our village. Thank you. Okay. All right. Myself and two of my neighbors are going to read through this letter that you guys might actually have seen a draft of about a month ago. But to make it more interesting, we're going to break it up. The Lathrop, Ashland, and Franklin comments for the EDC meeting. Our neighborhood coalition is very much looks forward to new development coming to Madison Street on our end of town. We are energized by the future of a safer, more beautiful and vibrant community where we have for years tolerated empty, blighted and toxic village-owned properties. As such, we welcome, encourage and support development on the Lutheran Family Services property currently under delayed abatement and demolition. After the small stakeholder meeting on February 22nd, our neighborhood group held our own focus group to discuss our desires for the replacement of buildings in the 7600 block of Madison. We appreciate the opportunity to share these thoughts with you tonight. In a nutshell, we want something charming, not alarming, to replace the dangerous eyesore that currently sits on these parcels. We want the property developed to be friendly to our community. We also understand that prevailing economic conditions, along with the configuration of the parcels, could lead to a significant degree drive the decision-making process for the development, both from a viewpoint of the village needs and municipal capacities, and from the developers themselves. We recognize that economic conditions for real estate sector in general have changed over the past year and continue to change rapidly and dramatically as we shift into the post-pandemic routines and economic realities. We believe these factors will result in a long wait for the village to find a suitable, able, and willing developer. We do not believe changing current zoning regulations will have any impact on attracting a developer and do not favor changing the current C2 zoning across Madison Street. It is essential for the longstanding stakeholders in this neighborhood to proactively plan and to work with the Village of River Forest and any future identified developers to ensure that any new construction benefits our greater community and respects the existing residential homes and neighbors. How we define community friendly. We define community friendly as not taller than 35 feet. Contains quality retail office rental space that is affordable for small, locally owned businesses to occupy. Higher cap rates will lead to higher rental rates, which will lead only to larger regional national businesses moving in. Locally owned businesses will reinvest their profits into our community. Larger companies will not do so. Contains residential units, rental or condo, of a reasonable amount so that the traffic on our residential streets is not overloaded and does not increase danger. As our end of town evolves demographically, we are seeing more small children who walk to and from Lincoln and Roosevelt School. Traffic loading patterns are of critical importance to keep our children safe. 4, contains residential units, rental or condo, of a reasonable amount not to overwhelm our municipal and educational resources. And finally, built with quality materials in a style that is consistent with our neighborhood. Any proposed oversized building taller than the current three-story zoning will be adjacent to a number of existing two-story residential homes in an established neighborhood.
Hi, Annette Madden at 14 Ashland Avenue. I'm going to continue with the zoning aspect of Madison Street. It was at our stakeholder meeting, Mr. Housiel stated that he has received every development project in River Forest for the last 26 years. He claimed that River Forest zoning is out of whack with other municipalities. Statement belies the facts. In examining 21 comparable Chicago suburbs zoning code dates, we found that the dates of the codes were either earlier or comparable to River Forest. River Forest is 95, Wilmette 93, Forest Park 1969, Elmwood Park 92, Brookfield 96, Westchester 64, et cetera. Oak Park is 2017, but the maximum code height in Oak Park is 45 feet, not 50. River Forest code for C2 on Madison between Lathrop and Thatcher should not be updated across the board to eliminate all height, density, parking, FAR, and setbacks in current zoning. Rezoning to accommodate 4 to 5 story building as proposed is a significant departure from the currently adequate zoning of 3 story. Any zoning for a single building can be accomplished by variances on an ad hoc basis. To specifically address the density recommendations of Mr. Housiel, we are open to reducing the minimum required area for residential units, but not to eliminating the bedroom requirement. We may be open to the reduction of parking spaces per unit, but any development should include sufficient parking for visitors and potential commercial uses and not encroach on our residential properties or flow over to our residential streets. Do you want me to keep going? No, that's I have.
Hi, Cal Davis, 13 Franklin. Talking about height, increasing the limit on the building height by changing the zoning code is not acceptable to our neighbors. Madison Street primarily comprises single and two-story buildings. Three-story buildings are more than sufficient to replace the current two-story building, and it's 30% higher than the current building. Suggestion of a 4 to 5 story building, 45 to 50, is completely out of whack with our residential neighborhood. Below, from the letter you received, below are some photo illustrations of the of a three-story new construction building next to a block of family homes. First photo is across the street on North Avenue in Gilwood. Second photo is a four-story apartment building in Forest Park on Madison across from the LCFS facility. Even a three-story building up against our alley would have obstructed our views, light, air, changed the character of our neighborhood, but the zoning has already been modified to accommodate a three-story building. setback. Mr. Housel specifically stated that the setback on the Ashland would be maintained. A visual illustration he provided appeared to show elimination of the setback such that a new building was closer to the sidewalk street. We do not approve of a building that expands wider into the current setback on Ashland. As far as traffic goes, any zoning variance for increased density should be carefully vetted for traffic and parking concerns in the neighborhood. In conclusion, we ask the EDC, when making your recommendation to the village trustees, to consider not the highest and best use of these properties, but also the impact on the residential neighborhoods. It is essential for the longstanding stakeholders in this neighborhood to proactively plan and work with the village to ensure that any new construction benefits our greater community and respects existing residential historical homes and neighbors. Our small neighborhoods cannot support a massive and dense structure at the end of our streets. Ask yourselves, would you want this in your backyard? Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That's great. We appreciate all the thoughtful comments there. I didn't get the name of the first speaker.
That was Renee Duba.
Renee Duba.
And Annette Madden. Yep.
Yep. Yeah, I got Annette and Cal. Thank you, all three of you. Matt, were there more public comments?
Yeah, just for reference, Kyler, there's about five more public comments in the room.
Got it.
And there are three letters and probably some folks that are logged on Zoom.
Sounds good.
Tim Jacob. Thank you. Don Huber. Beth Chang.
Thank you. My name is Beth Chang, and I live on the 0100 block of Franklin, and I have for 20 years. Thank you for your service on the Economic Development Commission. And, you know, we all want to see development. We know this is a challenging thing to do in River Forest. So thank you for, you know, applying your time and your expertise to that. We all want to see viable development that also preserves, enhances the quality of life for residents. My main request tonight is actually that the EDC take some more time before making any recommendations to the village zoning changes, because my understanding is that there is no specific development proposal on the table. The proposed zoning changes were posted publicly for the first time last Friday. The concept renderings that were shown to this group in February, in which I had the opportunity to see and appreciate John Helsfield sharing that with a small group of residents, but it was at a meeting that I heard about only through word of mouth. So I believe that many residents have not had the opportunity to, you know, learn about these important proposals and the potential benefits that they might bring. They need that time to become informed, have the opportunity to ask questions, have the opportunity to hear the reasoning that went into all of you coming to this conclusion or to coming to these ideas, and to provide input. So that's my main thing. I will say that overall, my view, as has been mentioned, is that the village should only consider variance requests in the context of specific development proposals, and that unless it is explained to me, I don't understand why we need a global zoning change for the entire length of Madison from Thatcher to Lathrop. If we make a global change now, I feel that undoubtedly there will still be requests for variances in the future, and that they will then start from that new floor, so to speak. If you do feel compelled to proceed with a recommendation tonight about making some sort of proactive zoning changes, I would ask that you consider limiting that recommendation to the site of the Lutheran and Family Services building. Then we could see whether that type of proactive change actually succeeds in attracting a development and go from there. In addition, as has been mentioned, I would ask that you include a recommendation that neighborhood concerns around traffic, parking, density, privacy, and setbacks be considered as the process. Finally, to help residents understand and have informed opinions, it would be really helpful to see kind of a written analysis behind these changes, right? Most of us have no expertise in these areas. We don't know what a FAR is. We don't know why it would be important to reduce the square footage or reduce the parking requirement. But I'm sure that, you know, many experts have that knowledge. And if you could educate the residents on rationale behind these proposals and show us some options under the current or a modified code, and provide a vision that assesses potential demand for different types of commercial or residential spaces, benefits for the neighborhood and the village as a whole, how specific changes, zoning changes, would help attract development, and compare to similar municipalities that have successfully development, and finally, ways to address impacts on the neighborhood. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Very thoughtful comments.
Hi, Teresa Peavy. I'm on the zero block of Ashland. And I first just want to reiterate what the previous four speakers have said. I agree with what they have said. I just come with a couple of questions that have been mentioned, but I want to make sure they get answered. And one is what Beth said, why are we doing this now? We have been assured there's no interested developer. So why are we saying we have to change all of these variances now in order to attract someone? They could ask for that anyway. But why not tear down what you have, deal with what we have, and then look at what's good long term? The second question is, what data is there that this is what a developer wants? You've made these suggestions that these are the things that developers have to have, but I don't know that there's any data that says that's needed. And the third thing is when we had the community meeting, Mr. Hausiel said, well, we want to do this so that they won't come back and ask for more variances later on. So I do want to know, if these changes are put in place, what are the assurances that there won't be any more variances? If you say, okay, we're going to go to four stories, that another developer comes in and says, hey, can we have a variance for five? And then you're doing it anyway. So why did we go through this whole process? So I just want some kind of assurances that if you do this, that there won't be any requests for variances later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Peter Rakalis. Is there anyone on the Zoom call that would like to speak during public comment? You can raise your hand or chat. Otherwise, I will proceed to reading the letters that I have received. Like there's no comments from those attending on Zoom. So the first letter that I received is from Kathleen and Daniel Corcus on the 100 block of Franklin. Dear EDC commission members and Mr. Walsh, first of all, thank you, Mr. Walsh, for agreeing to read aloud letters from River Forest residents who cannot attend this EDC meeting in person or via Zoom due to attending annual religious holidays, which start today and this evening. I am writing to make points regarding proposed village code zoning changes to the TIF areas of River Forest. These points were discussed and presented in drawings of proposed construction at the, quote, stakeholders meeting for the Madison TIF area. I am very much against code change that would change and allow the following. Number one, current square foot requirements for homes, allowing small studio units, therefore adding to area density. Number two, parking for only 1.2 to 1.5 cars per unit. Where will all the cars go? Number three, building higher than three stories tall, adding an eyesore to the area which does not fit in our community. Number four, changing traffic flow by adding a cul-de-sac / blocking of Ashland Avenue at Madison Street. How will these cars access Madison Street to go anywhere? They will have to drive north on Ashland Avenue to Vine Street and then turn east or west on Vine to get to a street, Lathrop or Franklin, to again drive south to access Madison Street. Left-hand turns are not allowed from Lathrop Avenue onto Madison for hours each day. The four-way stop at Vine and Franklin is already a slow to optional pause for many. The intersection will become more dangerous. The traffic flow will be drastically increased. Number five, putting insufficient first floor space in this building for viable businesses to rent. This is a situation occurring all over the country. At the stakeholders meeting, these first floor business opportunities were referred to as incidental businesses or something to that effect. Across the street from this building site is a brick building in Forest Park. It has storefront space on the first floor and residences above it. These storefronts have been empty since the building was erected years ago. based upon a suggested square foot rental price and the small space allowed to, quote, incidental businesses, these spaces will likely sit empty. Where will their customers park? How can they make money with so little access to customers? Isn't the off-site a definition of insanity, quote, repeating a past action and expecting a different outcome, end quote? If you are going to allow a building with first floor business rental opportunities to bring in tax revenue, you have to set them up for success. Large enough space, sufficient plumbing and parking. I welcome new development and businesses in our community and affordable housing, but it must fit into our community and be set up to be successful and not to further degrade our traffic problems here. Thank you for your time and consideration. Regards, Kathleen and Daniel Corcus. The second letter that I received from Angie Grover. Members of the Economic Development Committee, my name is Angie Grover, and my family and I have lived at 7617 Vine Street in River Forest for the last 10 years. I am writing to weigh in on tonight's agenda item number 5, specifically the Madison Street redevelopment plan, as you consider next steps. I am excited that the village is moving forward to bring vibrant, community-friendly business and living space to the other side of our block. There are several concerns I have with the proposal as it stands, and I ask that you weigh the path forward more comprehensively as to respect our neighborhood. I will touch on each of these concerns very briefly, all of which stem from the proposal to change zoning. Number one, height. I do not support increasing the limit on building height by changing the zoning code. There are no buildings that exceed 3 stories until you are east of Oak Park Boulevard and for miles to the west through Maywood and Hillside. Additionally, the building diagonally across from the proposed site should serve as an example of what not to do. It overshadows the neighbors to the south across the alley and its commercial space remains vacant. Number two, parking. Density and parking go hand in hand. Based on the proposal, there should be sufficient parking for visitors and potential commercial uses that does not encroach on residential properties or the already crowded streets. Number three, setback. The setback on Ashland must be maintained. We chose to live in this part of the village because it is extremely walkable, and to reduce the setback is not in character with the existing development, nor would allow for sufficient space for foot traffic. Number four, traffic. Last year, the village responded to our efforts to slow traffic on Ashland with a stop sign at Ashland and Vine. There are more than 40 children in the 6-block radius, and you must take traffic into consideration for the community safety as you move forward. Thank you for taking these comments into the record and for seriously considering the impact of your decisions on the people who have chosen to live here. With regard, Angie Grover. And there's one more. By email meeting. Unless Megan Sanfilippo is here or on Zoom. My name is Megan Sanfilippo. I live on Franklin Avenue near the proposed zoning changes to Madison Street and the subsequent development opportunities at the former Lutheran Family Services site. I encourage you to recommend the zoning that provides the highest and best use of the site and surrounding parcels while benefiting the immediate neighborhood as well as the village as a whole. In my view, that would mean a mix of uses with walkable, viable commercial spaces and the appropriate building depth and density to support it. An unkept empty lot or a 3-story residential development without neighborhood amenities would be a missed opportunity for this business corridor. With this in mind, I would also like to see thoughtful consideration by the village of the nearest neighbors' concerns over light, green space, traffic, and privacy when reviewing any specific proposals in the future. Please also consider requesting additional concept drawings from Housiel Levine without the presence of cul-de-sacs so they may be used for informational and marketing materials. Similar calming measures were studied and not recommended by KLOA in the July 2022 traffic study for the northeast corner of the village. That is all the public comment that I have received. I know there were a few folks that might have showed up after the meeting started. Did anyone else want to speak during public comment? That is that, Chairman Brown.
Well, I'd really like to reiterate what Matt said concerning everyone coming out, taking the time to provide their thoughts. It's really important that this committee, you know, we're here to serve River Forest, all River Forest. So it's really important that we have these voices come in. There was some really good A lot of great points. I think some of these we could certainly address at whether now or in the future. Some of the questions we can answer now or in the future. I really do appreciate it. What I really do appreciate also is that everyone is for development. It's just the right development. And there's going to be differing opinions on what that is. And so we're just going to try to have to figure that out, try to take everything involved, account for everything, continue to talk with the neighbors, continue to talk with developers, work with House of Levine and try to come up with what's best. I don't want to speak out of turn and try to answer these one by one. I don't think that's appropriate at this point by any stretch, but did want to, again, reiterate what Matt said and to thank everyone for coming in and sending the emails and providing really, really important feedback. And I want to reassure everyone that it's being heard and it's understood. And our goal is to make sure that whatever we do, it's for the best of all River Forest, but certainly any development, it's going to impact those neighbors. And we want to make sure that their concerns are heard. So really appreciate everyone's thoughtful comments. With that, I think this is the longest we've had to go before we had to approve meeting minutes, but that is the next agenda item. Does everyone get a chance to review the meeting minutes? Any questions, observations, edits? If not, Matt, could you ask for a vote?
Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Ned.
Member
all in favor? Yep. All right.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Opposed? Passes.
Great. Is Liz, I think I see Liz over there in the corner.
Yep, I'm here.
Thanks, Liz. Do we have a chamber update? It's been a minute.
I guess for the group here, my name is Liz Holt. I'm the executive director of the Oak Park and River Forest Chamber of Commerce. I'm going to keep my comments brief tonight because I think everybody here is not here to listen to the plight of the small business owner. The Oak Park River Forest Chamber has a large health and wellness fair that is coming up on April 23rd. This is one of our biggest events of the year, and it is our mission to engage our health and wellness businesses, continue to help them to recover from the pandemic and to get them connected in with the community. So this year, the event is at FFC. We already have about 85 vendors coming into one location. We have got representation from Austin, Broadview, Maywood, Forest Park, Oak Park, maybe River Forest. And so it's going to be a busy event. We anticipate we'll have 600 to 800 people will come through. Unlike past years, this year we have an unprecedented number of hospitals participating, and we have a large number of free testing procedures that people can come to. So that is why our mission for this year is to make sure that we extend our marketing into our surrounding communities, that people can come for free to this event. I guess I will just say I thank you for the comments tonight for those people who are thinking about the impact of changes in traffic conditions to the small business community. That is often something that comes a little bit later in consideration, but it's real. And, you know, to have changes after a business has come into a community can be detrimental. So we're always here on this committee talking about the small business owner at the same time as we're talking about development. I will just say, though, for the purposes of sitting here at this committee, we continue to struggle to engage the businesses in River Forest. It's incredible how I think businesses, when they sort of come into this village, they kind of put their head down and they do their own thing. So, you know, Matt and I continue to work together to try to outreach and engage people. But apart from like literally going into the business and saying this is how you can get involved in the greater community, it's incredibly difficult and very labor intensive. So I don't know if anybody has any comments, but I know, Kyler, you and I have talked about this at length, about how we can kind of just get people in the businesses in this village to be thinking a little bit more at a community-wide level rather than just their own business. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Liz. Yeah, it's you're doing great work. It has been a struggle, but it is appreciated. What was the date of the FFC, Health and Wellness?
Yeah, it's April 23rd. It's Sunday, April 23rd. No. It's from 11 to 2. We did just have confirmation today to pique anybody's interest that there will be a large-scale walk through colon. And you can, I know this is, I'm selling it now. I'm really selling it. There is also going to be a bike where you can pedal to make your smoothie with Smoothie King, and et cetera, et cetera. We really do try to engage our school districts and our senior population. This year we'll have the largest number of senior volunteers that we ever have because we're committed to the mission of both villages to support aging in place. And getting seniors out of their homes and out into the community and being social is a priority for this event. Yeah, thank you.
Well, Liz, I'd never tell you how to do your job, but I'm telling you now, you're bearing the headline when you don't start with a giant walkthrough colon. That's amazing.
Can I tell you, I was on the phone today with somebody who's going to be coming to us from ABC 7 News. And when I said a giant walkthrough colon, they said, yes, please. Yes. We want to put that on TV.
Totally.
I don't know. And there's polyps and everything. So for those of us of the age that are getting colonoscopies, we know what all of that means. So there we have it. Sorry, Matt, you're blushing.
See what everyone's missing? Okay.
This is how we roll at the EDC.
yeah. My goodness. Okay. Item number 5. Thanks, Liz. Item number 5, Madison North Shore. Did I see John in the front row? I don't know what the plan was exactly, Matt, to go over this item number, but.
Sure. Yes. John Hausio is here. I'll open up just to kind of provide right. some context, and John can add on to it. But to touch on at least some of the questions that came up, obviously the Village Board created the TIF districts on North Avenue, Madison Street, with the intent to encourage economic development to help attract revenues and services to the village. So it was decided by the Village Board to pursue changes to the zoning code to kind of make the Village River Forest zoning code relevant in today's marketplace. And that is why Hausio Levine was brought on to kind of shepherd through the process and work with the Economic Development Commission to make recommendations. Now, we began this work a few months ago with John Hausio and Nick Davis from Hausio Levine. And I just want to say, and John will probably reiterate this a few times, that this is an early step in this process for making zoning changes, if the Village Board even ends up deciding to adopt them. The Economic Development Commission is a recommending body to the Village Board. So they'll discuss some of the recommendations and the feedback that we've gotten to refer to the Village Board. I do want to just add that any change to the Village Zoning Code requires a public hearing and recommendation from the Zoning Board of Appeals. That is a universal. We had last summer, the Village Board adopted an ordinance to clarify its stance on solar panels. This was a recommendation from the Sustainability Commission that went to the Village Board. The Village Board said, sounds like a great idea, referred it to the Zoning Board of Appeals for them to discuss what the actual mechanics were for the Village Code. That's an example that I think is relevant here, because the Economic Development Commission is kind of taking these large scale, thinking about the market impacts and making recommendations to the Village Board that they will then decide on whether to refer that to the Zoning Board of Appeals, where the adoption of an ordinance will be discussed further. So this is an early step in this process. This is not going to happen overnight. This has already been a few months in the making, and there will be other several other public meetings before any of these changes are implemented. So I just wanted to put that out there to discuss. One other thing I wanted to do before handing it over to John was just discuss. Back in February, we had a stakeholder meeting where we invited some residents from Madison Street and North Avenue, or neighbors of those areas. And a lot of the public comments that were received when John and I were there in February were stated earlier tonight, but I wanted to just highlight a couple of the main takeaways specific to the zoning discussion that John will cover. One comment, several residents expressed a desire to see the commercial setbacks match the residential district setbacks that was mentioned a few times, especially with the context of Ashland. There were concerns expressed by residents about sight lines with the higher buildings of potentially viewing just additional view sight lines to backyards and houses that doesn't currently exist. And then there were several comments about parking and traffic, which are all very relevant to future economic development. Any plan development application that were to come through, even after these zoning changes were approved, will require that a traffic study is done as part of that application for consideration by the Development Review Board and the Village Board. The intent is not to remove that requirement or expectation for any future development. So that would be a conversation depending on what the use is. There's different traffic flows, different visitors to the site, if it's residential, commercial, different types of commercial. So that requirement that there be a traffic study to expect how many cars to expect on our streets will still be a requirement for any application and review process going forward. And then somewhat related, there were comments at that meeting about that parking for any use should be provided on site, and the village should not allow or provide for parking off site. And those are the kind of the main takeaways from that meeting back in February. A couple other comments tonight were also shared at that time. And with that, I'll hand it over to John.
All right, thanks, Matt. Chairman Braun and members of the EDC and residents, just for the record, I think you all know who I am, but John Houseal, I'm the village's planning consultant and a village resident, and I've been both for about 25 years. So I'm going to try to go through, I'll go through a presentation. You've got it loaded up, Matt. We'll go through that in a little bit. The majority or much of this has been viewed by the public already, the EDC already. So I'm not going to go through it and just sort of provide context. It's been out there for a few months. It's the same PowerPoint you've all seen. We've made a few corrections, and we responded to a couple of things that residents had noted. And I'll go through those changes in a little bit. Just a couple of things. And I know that I'm going to repeat some stuff that I said in February. I think I repeated it several times at that meeting. Almost became sort of laughable saying the same thing over and over again. But I heard a few things this evening that were counter to some things that were stated back then. But I know some of the people here this evening or some of the people who may be emailed or watching via Zoom may not have had the benefit of being at that meeting in February. So I'll go over a couple of things in general. First, I think it bears going over a couple of the questions that were made, that were asked. One of them was, why now? Why is the village doing this now? And that's a good question. And the answer to that is, over the last 20 plus years, every plan development that is proposed that's mixed use or multifamily has requested site development allowances from the village. No one's been able to come in as of right under the underlying zoning district through the PUD process and met height, density, parking, FAR, et cetera, setback, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody has requested changes, some of them quite considerable. Doubling of height, tripling of density. I mean, some pretty substantial requests were made for developments on a case-by-case basis. Whenever that is done, it is often residents would come in, and not just along Madison Street, but throughout the village, Lake Street, North Avenue, Harlem. And whenever a development came forward, if it didn't match the underlying zoning, and it never did, residents would say, what's the point of having a zoning ordinance with standards if we always are granting waivers that are so in excess of what the code says? And after 20 plus years of hearing that, the village says, well, maybe we should take a look at our zoning because it hasn't been updated with regard to commercial standards in decades. And if everybody is requesting relief, and some of them considerable relief, then maybe we should take a look at these things proactively if we're granting them. And the village has consistently granted waiver from underlying zoning and has for a long time. In the comprehensive plan that was adopted several years ago, there was a specific recommendation in the comprehensive plan that was adopted by the village board that said as part of its implementation recommendation to examine the commercial districts along the corridors to see if they should be changed to accommodate better commercial mixed use and residential development. So a specific recommendation of the comprehensive plan from a few years ago was to undertake this exact process. So that's the why. So it's been a while in the making. But that is the why now. There's no magic as to this month versus this month versus last year. A lot of things weren't done during COVID, so that sort of delayed a lot of the actions immediately after the plan adoption. But now that we're coming out of that, some of these actions are being picked up. This is one of the recommendations of the comprehensive plan. So that's one of the key things. I think another thing to reiterate, and I've said this probably no less than 20 times at the meeting in February, there is no proposed development. The recommended zoning changes are not recommending a development or a site plan. The illustrations in the presentation were for the EDC just to facilitate discussion. They weren't proposed recommendations. They weren't proposed facades. They're just color volumetric renderings to show at scale some of what we were talking about. So these were not proposed developments. These were not proposed buildings. I don't think a proposal that came forward in this village that was literally a solid block without articulation up three or four stories would ever get approved. That wouldn't get approved for two stories. So again, those were just to facilitate discussion of regulation. So I've said that probably 25 times. I'll probably say it again later tonight. Those are not development recommendations. There is no proposed construction. Some of the letters or emails that were read talked about that the proposed construction of the EDC or by myself or my firm, there is no proposed construction. So everything up to this point has just been to facilitate discussion. That's it. I think the other thing that bears repeating is something that Matt just went over and we went over at the February meeting as well. The Economic Development Commission, like other boards and commissions, are recommending bodies to the village board. The village board has charged the EDC with examining this. Having discussion amongst themselves, providing recommendations back to the EDC to take this issue up. If the village board at that time decides to take up this issue, they would then refer it back to the Zoning Board of Appeals. The Zoning Board of Appeals would have a public hearing, several meetings, more opportunities for neighborhoods to weigh in. The Zoning Board of Appeals would then make its recommendation. That recommendation would then go to the village board. The village board would then have another public meeting to discuss it. Before taking any action, if they even decided to take action. So again, this is exploratory, it's thinking, it's discussing, there are no actions being taken in a premature and or rushed manner, not at all. So if you think they're moving quickly to get something across the finish line, that's not the case. There's a lot of diligence involved and everybody's taking their time and going through the channels that the village always goes through. Microphone thing, I don't know where it went, but that's okay. So I think those are pretty important. So I'll go through now, I guess, the presentation that's up here. And some of the questions I think I'll answer as I go through this. I don't know if. All right, so as Matt is loading this up, a couple of things as well. Somebody mentioned before that the zoning that our zoning ordinance wasn't quote unquote out of whack. I said it was out of whack. The standards were out of whack. The data zoning ordinance is adopted isn't a measure as something being current or in line with market. Zoning ordinances get amended all the time. And that's not always reflected by the adopted date on the cover of an online code, even in Sterling codifiers or Muni code online, or a PDF by the village. So we've looked at other villages' codes and not just the date of adoption, but what the commercial standards were. some commercial standards in some quarters that need to be adopted in the last 10 or 15 years because they were far in excess of what we had anyway. So what we are looking specifically at is the commercial corridor zoning standards in River Forest relative to other similarly zoned corridors. And again, development requests and planned approved development in River Forest over the last 20 plus years. So,
and John, I thought you had like an Excel spread that sort of highlighted that, didn't you?
We in years past under other zoning things, we've looked at several different codes. We did as this one as well. We also called up and examined the codes for all the surrounding communities with regard to Madison Street, North Avenue, and other smaller commercial districts they had in those villages, those being Elmwood Park, Oak Park, and Franklin, and Forest Park. So, but we're familiar with, and we looked at several codes across the region, and we do that routinely all the time as we work on zoning throughout the Chicagoland area. And we're currently working on, I think, zoning ordinances in 5 or 7 states right now. So we're very familiar of contemporary commercial standards. But we really wanted to see in the Oak Park, River Forest, Forest Park area what was taking place on these corridors and similar types of scale development, those areas immediately adjacent to single-family residential neighborhoods. So I don't know, Matt, do you have a remote or are you my remote? Okay, sounds good. All right, we can move. So this is, again, this presentation you see here wasn't developed just for this evening. It's the same one this group and the audience residents have seen again for the past few months. There's just a few changes to it, so I'm not going to go through it in detail. I'm going to get to the recommendations or the proposed recommendations to the go ahead and go through these. Okay, so these are opportunity sites. And again, we work, Nick Davis from our office worked with the EDC. You can go to the next slide, worked with the commission to identify potential opportunity sites. And this isn't where we were proposing or the EDC or the village proposing redevelopment, but we tried to identify sites that we thought would likely be the most likely candidates for redevelopment pressure going forward. So if development were to be proposed on these corridors, these are what we thought would be the most likely candidates a development might take a run at. So those are the ones we started wanted to look at. So again, these are just development opportunity sites, not proposed development, and we're not recommending they be developed. And we wanted to show a couple of different kinds. So if we go to the first one on North Avenue, you can just blow through. I mean, so this is the site. It's pretty, you know, and again, here we show it. This is the Montessori school site. Again, we just showed what development could look like on here. When we do these renderings, the yellow is residential, the red is commercial, the dark gray or black on the back half is at grade enclosed parking. So you'd pull in off the parking lot and then the surface parking lot. The volumetric renderings in gray to show surrounding buildings that more or less represent visually the height of those existing multifamily, single family. And in this case, of course, across North Avenue, they have some pretty tall buildings in Elmwood Park. This is not even the tallest, but it's significantly taller than what we have in River Forest. So again, we're not proposing a development that would be that unsightly. We were looking at height, setback, volumetrics. So go ahead and go to the next one. The other one we looked at here was a little bit further east on the corridor, and this looked at several smaller sites. The Firestone site, you can see they're sort of in the lower left-hand corner, and then commercial block frontage over there with a sort of a one-story commercial shopping center with parking below. So we tried to show a couple of different types of development that could work under different zoning scenarios. And again, this was just for discussion purposes with the EDC to sort of visualize volumetrically in terms of shadow, parking, access, surrounding properties, what those volumes might look like. And you can see here how tall some of those buildings are on the north side of North Avenue in Elmwood Park. And those, again, volumetrically are realistic renderings for proportionate reasons. These are some of the sites on North Avenue we looked at. When we had the neighborhood meeting on North Avenue, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, the really only concern there was that any development, whether it be residential, commercial, and or mixed use, provides sufficient parking to prevent a spillover of parking and or aggravated traffic patterns within the neighborhoods adjacent to the area.
Correct.
And that was the gist of the issue. So Madison Street, you see the graphic here. Again, the black outline there is what we looked at in terms of this study. The red area is the TIF district. And one of the corrections one of the residents noted last time was before, if you look over in between Ashland and Lathrop at the far right, we had the study area bounding going up to those residential homes in the TIF district, and we lowered that back down to be correct. So that was that line was in the wrong place. That's one of the changes we made to this presentation, was we corrected that boundary. And then, again, we looked at two different opportunity sites for illustrative purposes, or sort of like thinking about stuff. And one was that shopping center, again, because it's a one-story, multi-story tenant or, you know, strip center with parking in front as a block on Franklin and Madison. And then the other one that was sort of a no-brainer, the EDC selected to look at, and that was the village-owned property on Madison Street. So, again, two properties we thought were likely candidates for redevelopment if there were any. So, go ahead. So the first one is a shopping center site. And again, we just took a look at the existing shopping center and showed what it would look like with a four-story building, parking in the rear off the alley. This shows, again, commercial tenant space on the ground floor with three levels of residential above. This would fit within or less than a 50-foot height, so above the 30 now, recommending to go to 50. This would show what that would look like. The other thing that this shows is a viable commercial depth. The somebody noted, and rightfully so, the commercial or mixed-use development that's south of River Forest in Forest Park, that newer one that's gone up, it's a few years old now, that has, I believe, 36 residential units, commercial on the ground floor, and it has at-grade enclosed parking off the alley in the back. I believe that is parked at about 1.125 per unit, or close to that. It's got 12 units per floor, 36 units total. That site is smaller than the site we have for the Lutheran Family Services site. But the site across the street, as one of you rightly noted, the commercial they have there, I refer to as sort of token commercial space. It's only like 20 feet or something deep, right? Behind that is all the parking inside the building. And a commercial space that is only 20 some odd feet deep is restricted in terms of the commercial viability of that tenant space for a lot of tenants. That's a tough retail space. It's a tough restaurant space. That's a tough anything space. So it's sort of what I call that a sort of token retail frontage. It gives you something other than residential in there. It gives you something other than just a brick wall with parking behind it. It's more interesting to look at, but it's harder to occupy in terms of tenant space. So that tenant space, I believe, is only about 20, maybe a little bit more than 20 feet deep. Most strip center type commercial, the minimum commercial depth you want to see is usually around 60 feet or more. And that's the minimum depth for commercial. That's only about 20 feet deep. The minimum you want is about 60 feet deep. So when we show commercial here, it's at least, if not more than 60 feet deep. So viable, tenantable commercial space, regardless of who the tenant is. And this reflects that. So we're not, there's no point in having that token commercial retail space. You can't occupy. It's very difficult to occupy. And that's the challenge. One of the challenges with the Forest Park building. So we can go to the next one. So again, this just shows a 50-foot building with commercial on the ground floor and residential above. Next, we're going to look at the village-owned property over the Lutheran Family Services property. And then because the village owns the two single-family homes north of the alley, one north of the alley, not stacked two, but the homes adjacent to the alley, we wanted to show those in the renderings as well. And that's what this shows. It shows the first floor commercial, and it shows three floors of residential above. So it's a four-story building. This could not be done under the current 30-foot limit. This reflects a 50-foot limit. This actually shows a little bit less than what 50 feet would be. And I do want to say, because we made this change, here we showed the cul-de-sac. And again, we're not recommending the cul-de-sac. A concept that is in the comprehensive plan, and it's actually in the River Forest Corridors plan. This study going back 12, 11, 14 years, a long time ago, the notion of cul-de-sacking some streets to create more parking. So no one's recommending it, but we said, well, if we're going to visualize commercial, let's visualize one of these other concepts to see if it could even work. And that's what this is. So no one's proposing the cul-de-sac. And the reason we show the cul-de-sac and the reason it's a concept that's been floated out, Forest Park does something very similar down where Louis Diner is, you know, where there's that parking down in Forest Park. Well, that used to be a street that connected into the neighborhood. Well, they closed that off. They put in parking. And that's exactly this sort of a concept. You cul-de-sac for the residential neighborhood. You take the public right-of-way from the cul-de-sac to the busy street. You put in public parking as a way to provide parking for a commercial area. It's really common. It's done all over. We didn't come up with the concept, but we show what it looks like here. If you go to the next one, we show what it would look like if there was no cul-de-sac and it just went through. So it doesn't change anything in terms of the development potential or anything else. We just wanted to show that concept. So if you don't like the development concept or the concept of a cul-de-sac, this is with just Ashland punching all the way through. So again, no one's proposing that. And I echo what you residents have said, or some of you residents have said, and I did this in February as well. Before the village undertook the recommendation or actions to cul-de-sac a street, they would likely block it off with, temporary or barriers to see, get used to it. Could it provide the parking you want? Did it make any sense? They would have to do a detailed traffic study, detailed parking study, a circulation, a public safety study. All that would be done before they made permanent recommendations. So don't think that this is recommending that this is going to be done. And all of your concerns about the need to do all those other things before anything like this was even considered, you're exactly right, and it would. So we threw this diagram in there to show you what it would look like without the cul-de-sac. So it doesn't change the building and or the parking. For the next one. We wanted to show a couple of different ones. So the notion of somebody said, like, we shouldn't be insisting on a multi-tiered or multi-floor development. Someone could still come in and build, if they wanted to do a one-story restaurant, they had the best restaurant concept in the world, they could come in and do a one-story restaurant. Because you can go to four stories doesn't mean you have to go to four stories. You could still do one. You could do two. You do whatever you wanted. We're just trying to set the table for a viable market development. So this sort of shows, what if there was a, one or two-story commercial development right on the corner, standalone, and then maybe the balance of the site was a smaller mixed-use development. This one actually shows commercial in the front with some enclosed parking, that dark gray in the back off the alley. So again, we showed a couple of different concepts, but that shows the 50-foot in height. So I'll go through the preliminary zoning recommendations. And again, this, we're not changing the zoning with this discussion. Nothing's being codified. We still have to go through months more public meetings and other things, but these are our preliminary recommendations for EDC consideration. So these recommendations are just for you to think about and talk about in terms of what you may or may not want to recommend to the village board to consider, and if they should then consider it onto the Zoning Board of Appeals. So this is for your consideration. So go to the next one. So what we did with all of these, and I think I went through these, I refresh my memory, we went through these at the February meeting with the neighborhood. We sort of went through chunk by chunk, and I explained what FAR was and setbacks and height. We went through each one, and I said what the current code was and what we were recommending, and then residents weighed in. So these are all the standards. We'll go through these one at a time. The following slides, Matt, zoom in. You don't have to do that.
Oh, okay.
We break it out, and we zoom in. We anticipated your move to zoom in. So go to the next slide. Okay, there you go.
Oh, look at that.
So look at that. We try to anticipate.
Always one step ahead.
So we try, Kyler. So here is the standards for Madison Street and North Avenue, current and proposed zoning standards. So right now we've got the lot area square footage, 3275. We're not proposing any changed minimum to lot size. The lots are what they are. We're not looking to change that. Lot area per dwelling unit, square footage, 2,800 square feet, proposed standards, non-applicable for this one, lot width 25 feet. We're not changing any proposals to that either. Go ahead and go to the next one. All right, the setbacks, the only setbacks that the, we're not proposing any changes to the setbacks. And I know, and I want to acknowledge and reiterate, we know that the residents have stated a preference that that setback off of, I'll use this as an example, Ashland, as it intersects Madison Street, as you go down Ashland, I'm driving now, say, from Vine. I thought it was interesting. One of the residents who emailed in their comments lives in my old home. My first house in River Forest was 7616 Vine Street. We lived there for 5 years. So I think it was the Grovers that live there now. So great house. But as you're driving southbound on Ashland and you're approaching Madison Street, right, you know, those homes sort of have a rhythm. There's a, you know, a front yard setback in the homes. They're, for the most part, all in line. That's true with most residential blocks in the village. Not 100%, but pretty true. And the residents indicated that they would like that setback to be maintained all the way through to Madison Street. And right now it's not. It comes closer to the street. And in fact, in every intersecting street to the major corridors in town where you have residential and then the commercial frontage, that residential snap sort of a chalk line setback isn't maintained through to the busy street. The village has codes regarding what the setbacks need to be when it's in adjacency to residential, depending on the orientation of the lots. It does not require the code right now that an intersecting street front yard setback for the homes be maintained as a side yard front setback to the commercial on the street. And we're not recommending that it does. And the reason being is that would take too much of a setback, would create too big of a setback on the commercial property and take away a lot of the commercial viability of what could be built on that site. It doesn't mean that when somebody comes through plan development review process and public hearing, that it might get adjusted to be back a little bit and not right on the sidewalk. But we're not recommending any changes to the C1 or C2 setback requirements for front, rear, side, or corner side. So, and we know the residents would like to see that setback increase off of the intersecting side street, but we don't think that's a good idea for commercial development. And it doesn't exist anywhere else in the village, either through regulation or existing conditions. So we didn't do it here. For the next one. Okay, so building height right now is 35 feet on Madison Street and 50 feet on North Avenue. We're proposing to go to 50 feet on Madison Street and 65 feet on North Avenue. What this essentially does is get you one more story on each of those frontages. Right now, 35 feet on, is it 30 feet or 35 feet? I think it's 30 feet on Madison.
It's 30.
I think that's a mistake. It's 30 feet on Madison. We're proposing to go to 50. 30 feet on Madison right now under today's contemporary development practices won't really even get you a three-story mixed-use building. Because by the time you get your construction for the floor separated, you get your floor-to-ceiling height, you're not going to have an 8-foot or 9-foot commercial tenant space. You just won't. You might get that for residential. You're not going to get that for commercial. So for commercial mixed-use development with residential above, the 30-foot standard right now for Madison Street, you're not going to get a three-story development. You're going to get two-story, or you're going to get site development allowances. And so what we're recommending is to go to 50. 50 would allow you to have an 11 to 14-foot ground floor commercial space with 10, 10, and 10, or 11, 11, 11 on floors above for residential. So you don't have to have 50 feet to get four stories. But in talking with a lot of developers and talking to some folks and other planners, and we spoke with a lot of architects as well who work with developers, if you go to a 50-foot height maximum, anybody seeking a waiver, if you're proposing a four-story building, you're likely talking 52 feet, 53 feet. It's design of the parapet and screening and a few things like that. You're not talking about double in height like people ask for now, 30-foot in height waiver. So for building height, we're proposing 50 feet for Madison Street, 65 feet for North Avenue. So what that equates to is one floor more than is currently allowed. And I would even say 50 feet or four stories, 65 feet or five stories. You put the story in there as well. Building coverage is 100% in the C2 district and the district on North Avenue. We're not proposing any changes. It's not uncommon for commercial buildings on smaller lots to cover 100% or close of the lot. There is no big open space or things like that. Floor area ratio, again, this is the floor area of the building relative to the area of the lot on which it is located. So if you have a 10,000 square foot lot, a floor area ratio of 2.75 would allow you to have a 27,500 square foot building right now, all right? We have FAR in our residential neighborhoods as well. And so you can't build the Taj Mahal on a small lot, all right? Like if I live back on Vine Street or in my house now on Gale, and it was a small lot. I couldn't build that, take down that house and build an enormous, crazy big house on a teeny lot because FAR prevents that. But for commercial development, the one thing you typically don't hit in these areas is FAR. And with height and other requirements in place and parking and landscaping for anything adjacent to residential, we don't feel as though the floor area ratio is required. It's a bit of an antiquated regulation for commercial. And the trend is to eliminate floor area ratio. In fact, a lot of communities we spoke with don't have floor area ratio for their smaller commercial districts. And then density, current standard is units per acre. I don't know, I think some changes are made to this and it's not reflecting what it should be. Right now, the density units per acre, well, for commercial, it doesn't reflect it, so it defers back to the multifamily residential district. But we're proposing that the standards, yeah, these, pull up your old one, those are not correct. Changes were made to this to get it for tonight's meeting, and I think they changed some numbers around. Does it? Okay. Right now. Okay, yeah, so go ahead. This is just when we were working. This is some of the old recommendations. We have the zoning consideration changes on a few slides after that. So go ahead and open that one back up. All right, now go forward a few slides. We have a summary table in here. Okay, right here. All right, so this is where we have the zoning considerations. So this is the summary page of our recommendations that cover all the different regulations for the different districts, both for Madison Street and for North Avenue. So I apologize for that confusion. I think good news, we were building up to this slide. Some of that other stuff was in there and was sort of draft stuff. So we'll start with parking. And I agree, even though every single zoning ordinance without exception has parking standards, through the plan development review process, when a development is proposed, regardless of the parking that is proposed, the developer has to prove that the parking proposed is sufficient. So that is a requirement of anything going to get approval by the village. So regardless of what the standard is. Same thing for any traffic impact, but that's not a zoning thing. You can't zone traffic, so that's impact. So the parking requirements for North Avenue and Madison Street, currently it's two parking spaces per unit. And our recommendation is to go to 1 to 1.5 parking spaces per unit. When we spoke with developers, architects, other communities, this is the one of the standards other communities have moved more aggressively to reduce in the last 10 years. 1 to 1 is a very common thing, one unit per parking. Developers will often propose more than that because it's attractive, but some residents moving in here, whether they're quote unquote empty nesters or they're young professionals, they only want one car space and only have one car space. So the one parking space per one unit is common. We put in 1 to 1.5. The 1.5 would also then provide or ensure some guest parking for any residential, which is why the 1.5, and it may be where we land is 1.25. So for every unit, there's a guest parking space. If it was 1.5, obviously for every two units, you'd have an extra guest parking space. And that's a way to build in parking. So I think Oak Park right now, it's 1 to 1, one parking space per unit. And I think I inquired about whether it was, I had to go back and check my notes, if it was a one bedroom, a studio, a two bedroom, a three bedroom, they're like, we don't care. It's one parking space per one unit. But 1 to 1.5 is what we recommend. And I, from what I've seen, feel more comfortable or feel comfortable in the 1.25 range, but 1.5, 1.25 begins to get you baked in guest parking. So that's our recommendation. Currently it's 2. We would recommend something in the 1 to 1.5 range. Building height currently for North Avenue, it's 50 feet. And what we are proposing is we change it from 50 feet to 65 feet. That would allow a 5-story building with contemporary ground floor tenant space. Again, you're not seeing a 9-foot ceiling height in new commercial invested property or mixed-use development. An example right here is 18-foot ground floor, 11-foot second floor, 11-third, 11-fourth, 11-fifth. I'm trying to think if anybody on the EDC knows, and I can't recall, the height of the first floor for Lake and Lathrop. I think it's like 20 feet or something, or 18 or 20 feet. I think it's a really sort of a tall commercial space. But that would allow a contemporary commercial on the ground floor for viable tenant occupancy with the, that's how we got to the 65. Building height for Madison Street, it's currently, again, it's 35, I have to double check. We're proposing to be 50. It would allow a 4-story building. An example, sort of a 15-foot ground floor with an 11-foot second, third, and fourth floor. And again, in talking with a few different architects, they said if you had a 50-foot height and someone was proposing a 4-story building, it's reasonable to expect if somebody did want a site development allowance, you should only be talking a couple of feet. You wouldn't be talking, you know, 12, 17, 15, 20, 30 feet like we've seen in other developments in the village. But it would set the expectation. So to someone else's point here, legally, could someone come in after this and still propose a waiver from this? Absolutely, they could. The point is to set something that was more market responsible and accurate and contemporary, and then make it harder in terms of review process to deviate from that. One of the challenges of having a code now where everybody is asking for so much more is it's easy for someone to say, like, well, we don't have a benchmark because your code is so out of date. Your code is so far off. We don't have a guide. This is that guide. If we come back and say, hey, we did this last year, this is what it's going to be, you really got to make a case to go beyond this. Right now, it's easier because the standards have been proven to not be very applicable. For density, currently it's 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit. It's a weird way of calculating density when you first look at it. Most people, when they think of density and what that equates to, I'm looking at the top thing on the right-hand column. I don't have a pointer. Pointers don't work on screens anyway, so there's the pointer right there. So currently it's 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit. So what that equates to is 17 dwelling units per acre, okay? Like the lot across the street, for example, in Forest Park, that's way less than an acre and there's 36 lots. I think that density is 40-something or 50-something per unit. Actually, it's more than that. It's like 70 or 80-something per unit. What we're recommending is somewhere between 500 and 1,000 square feet of lot area per unit. We've talked again, there's no exact science. We've talked to developers and architects and planners in the Oak Park, River Forest, Forest Park, and Chicago Elmwood Park areas. We heard from more than one that what they're consistently seeing approved and what they are proposing and neighbors seem to be good with is something in the 400 to 500 square foot of lot area per every unit. That's on the much tighter end. So we recommend something in the 500 to 1,000. So if you did it at 1,000, it'd be 43 units per acre. And for example, I think the, Matt, do you know the Lutheran Family Services property, how many acres that is, the size of that property?
I believe with the two homes the village owns, it's a little bit over an acre.
Okay, so right now you'd be able to build, if it was one lot, you'd be able to build like maybe 18 units on that for the current village standard. And what we were saying, if we change it to the 1,000, you'd be able to put about 40 units plus on there. The FAR currently is 2.75. We're recommending to eliminate it. We don't think FAR is relevant for these corridors or for these commercial districts. Unit size right now is currently 1,800 square foot average gross living area. That's out of all the things that when we talked to the different planners, developers, or architects, the two that I don't want to say they thought was laughable, but they just sort of said like that's a non-starter, like that's not even responsibly realistic given the market. It hasn't been for forever. The two they cited was the density and the unit size. An 1,800 square foot unit is a big unit for a condominium or an apartment. And if this is the average, that means some of those are going to be bigger than that. So from what we saw and a lot of the folks we talked to in those other communities and what we've seen being proposed, a 1,000 square foot average apartment size or gross living area size per unit is still on the high side. A lot of one bedrooms and even two bedrooms are right at 1,000 or a little bit less. So if you had some of that mixed in there, and we're not proposing studios or efficiencies or anything like that, but a one bedroom minimum, still 1,800 square feet we thought was way too large. And 1,000 square foot average would allow some deviation in price point and product mix in one bedroom, two bedroom, three bedroom. So we would propose reducing that from 1,800 square feet to 1,000. Setbacks, we're not proposing any recommendations. One of the things we put in here before and is that consider eliminating requirement that every unit shall have at least one bedroom, so no studios. So right now, that is a requirement. You have to have at least one bedroom. So we're just putting it out there if going forward the village still wants to keep that or not. So that's not a hard recommendation. It's just sort of a do we want to consider that or not. So again, we're decreasing the parking per unit. At a minimum, developers could propose more if they want. Increasing the building height, both for Madison Street and North Avenue, to pick up one more floor of building to increase the density. Right now, with the 2,800 square feet per unit to purchase the property, to clear the property, to engineer it, to develop it, the 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit, this is the one of the regulations that developers most frequently seek deviation from and have for the last couple of decades, and not a minor deviation, but a very substantial one, because that's just the number that doesn't work economically from what we've heard and what we've seen over 20 years of experience in the village. And same thing with the unit size. Those are really big units. 1,800 square feet was way bigger than my first home, or bigger than my first home by quite a bit. And so to have multifamily or mixed use where the minimum unit size is bigger than many of the homes in town is challenging. So this is the summary of recommendations that we're giving to the EDC to consider and talk about and think about as part of their potential proposal to the village board for consideration. So I don't think there's anything after this, but I'm not sure.
John, thanks a ton.
Real quick, Kyler, if I can. So this is just neighboring communities for parking height and density. And again, we didn't look at like Northbrook or Wilmette or Glen Allen. We wanted to see what was being done because the markets are so different. So we wanted to see what was done in these markets. So River Forest parking is 2 per unit. Oak Park is 1 space per unit. Elmwood Park is 1.25 spaces per unit. Forest Park is the same as us. But from talking to folks there, they routinely grant relief from that standard as evidenced by the one across the street and other ones where they're even below the 1.25, but that's the way their codes read right now. So again, according to this, River Forest is the highest, even with Oak Park, even with Forest Park, but higher than Oak Park by double and significantly more than Elmwood Park. In terms of height, River Forest 30 on Madison, 50 on North Avenue. Oak Park is 50 feet on Madison Street. Forest Park is 50 feet on Madison Street. Elmwood Park is 60 to 75 feet on North Avenue. And density, River Forest, it's 2,800 square feet of lot area per unit. Oak Park is 750 to 1,000. So that's similar to what we recommended, somewhere in the 500 to 1,000. Oak Park, it's 750 to 1,000. Elmwood Park, it's 1,250 lot area per unit. So again, our density, regardless of the other standards, our density requirements are significantly more restrictive than anybody around us. And I tried to seek clarification for that 750 to 1,000 in Oak Park. And I believe what that was is if you provide a mixed-use development, so commercial economic development on the ground floor, you could have a higher density on what's above. If it's an entirety residential unit, that is the 1,000. So a slightly less dense if it's an all-residential product. If you're providing some economic revenue to the village, a sort of an economic job, goods, services, retail, employment, you could have a little bit higher density on the things above ground floor. and that's why that's 750 to 1,000. So you can see across the board, our parking is more restrictive than most, or more a bigger requirement than most other communities. Our height is more restrictive than other communities, and our density is significantly more restrictive than surrounding communities. Again, we look at the ones that shared those corridors.
Yeah, thanks. I think that could have been the spread I was talking about earlier that had the comparisons.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. I did want to mention, for the sake, not for the commission because they know, but for the sake on for those people on the call and in the room, I really appreciated the initial, a lot of the speakers. We too want something community friendly, and we do want something charming and flexible. The problem is that every development we have in River Forest, we require these variances. So we go to the development committee and say, well, just bring us something. And, here's our zoning laws, but don't worry, we'll change them. And they're not going to waste their time doing that. There's other places where they already have something in place. So the reason we're looking to do this is to modernize it so that we can go out and we can attract real development so that we're not having to choose, the bottom of the barrel. We want to be able to choose the best development ideas so that we can maximize revenue or do things like that. I really don't, to be honest with you, I don't really care about that at all. I want River Forest to have these developments that are charming, that, a lot of us are lifetime River Forest people. We want to see things go up that are going to be unique, that are going to be special. And when we change some of these zoning requirements, we're going to be able to have a lot more developers look at us so that then we're going to be able to pick and choose the best developments that fit what we all, what most of us want. So I did want to reinforce that, because that question did come up. Why are we doing this? What's the purpose? And I think I don't want to speak for everyone. I believe most of our heads are in the same place. I think we do want a lot of the same things for the community. There's a reason we're here in River Forest and not in some of the other neighboring communities. And it's because of the charming nature of it. And we all want to preserve that. But we're not getting the best development ideas with our current zoning. So I wanted to add that for the sake of those on the call and those in the room that don't make all these commission meetings.
Hey, Chairman Braun, if I can real quickly, just to sort of illustrate next steps, if and when the EDC gets to the point of saying these are the standards we like, what we will do with that direction is we will prepare draft zoning ordinance text amendments. So you can see exactly which section of the codes will be changed, what tables would be changed. Because when something goes to the EDC, when something goes to the ZBA, the way Chairman Martin runs those is when a proposed amendment is considered by the ZBA, they want to see a draft amendment. All right. So the preliminary recommendations are here, are preliminary recommendations for EDC discussion. So not recommendations of the zoning board. It's not recommendations of the village board. These are zoning considerations for the EDC. Based on EDC direction, whether they like them all, whether they don't like them all, whether they want to change them, whatever your direction is, we then will prepare draft zoning amendment language. That's what would go in front of the ZBA, not this. So.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay, so that's it, yeah.
I had a question.
Sure.
Has a traffic study been done? I mean, there's a cul-de-sac there. Proposing putting a cul-de-sac?
Yeah, I'll just reiterate. We're not proposing a cul-de-sac. We are not, I'll say it again, we're not proposing a cul-de-sac. In the corridor study that was done over a decade ago, the idea of potential cul-de-sacs was floated as an economic development tool. In the comprehensive plan that was adopted a few years ago, the notion of potentially having cul-de-sacs was proposed as maybe this could be an economic development tool. So because that idea and concept was floated in previous plans, we showed it illustratively what that might look like. We are not proposing a cul-de-sac. If a cul-de-sac were ever to be proposed by the village or a developer, extensive traffic studies would have to be done. We're not proposing one.
If a cul-de-sac is not proposed, or open, what is the traffic impact on Ashland?
Don't know until the development is proposed. So, and it's a good question. And this is what I was saying. parking you can regulate, height you can regulate, uses you can regulate, traffic impact you can't, proactively because you don't know what traffic impact is until a use or development is proposed. That's why any development that is proposed that includes a parcel of 20,000 square feet, a building of 20,000 square feet, a combination of building or property in excess of 20,000 square feet, any mixed-use development or any multifamily has to be a planned unit development proposal to the plan development PD board. As part of that submission requirement is a parking analysis and a detailed traffic study. So zoning can't regulate traffic impact because we don't know what it is going to be. If someone proposes a restaurant there, the traffic impact will be different than if someone proposes a two-story townhouse project. The traffic will be different. So traffic impact is analyzed at the time a development is proposed. It's not done in zoning. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that did make sense. But I think the concern, you know, and I live on the 100 block of Ashland. Concern is that if a building goes up there, whether you the cul-de-sac or you don't pull the cul-de-sac, it's going to have real impact on people who live on Franklin, who live on Lathrop. So, Amy, this looks good. I mean, it's a good thing what you've done here, but it's going to impact people in a real way.
Correct.
Close to that development. It's not going to impact people on the 1400 block of,
right,
of Lathrop, right? I mean, there's going to be real impact on the 0 block, the 100 block, the 200 block, whichever way this goes. And I don't want to start rolling, you know, let the ball start rolling, because once we approve this, it goes to the board, and you know the board sends it out in the zoning board to make changes. I didn't hear you mention anything about a traffic, going to the traffic study board or whatever we have here. We end up in a situation where it creates real problems for the people who live around there.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Traffic can cause real problems, but I'll say this clear as I can, I guess, or maybe I'm. Traffic impact cannot be analyzed proactively. We don't know what's going to go there. We're not proposing a development. Just changing zoning. The zoning exists all over the village. We don't know what the impact is going to be until a development is proposed. I propose 20 units or 30 units, or a restaurant or an office building. All of those will have a different traffic impact. At the time a development is proposed, that traffic impact has to be analyzed. That analysis has to be presented to the village board and the development review board in a public hearing with residents providing commentary. That analysis, along with other things, will go online at least a week before the public meeting so everybody can see it. And in fact, there will have to be a neighborhood meeting prior to application so the neighbors can ask the developer any questions they want. But we can't analyze the impact of traffic because we don't know what the development is. So we don't know what the traffic impact is going to be until someone proposes something. And even if somebody meets standards of zoning and the traffic or ingress and egress or parking just doesn't work, the village just say, we had our traffic guys look at this. We just don't think this is going to work. Like, you've not convinced us this is going to work. We can't approve it. But that's handled at the time a specific development from a developer is proposed. And that's not now.
I mean, you have proposed a number of units, not proposed, but you hypothetical number of units that you have up there. And there's going to be a business. Is there some way to model what it's going to look like if you say, what is this? How many units, if you have a four-story building, how many residential units are going to be there? Based on your analysis, I mean, you're saying that you want to propose a 1,000 square foot unit, 1.5 parking spots. Can you tell us how many cars are going to be there? If that's
no, until it's proposed. There's a million permutations as to what a development could look like. Maybe I want to go, and this has been borne out in the village. We had a developer, and maybe residents here remember, when the concept was proposed right across the street on the corner here for like the six-story apartment building. It was parked at like 0.8 spaces per unit. It had studios and efficiencies, some one bedrooms. I've never seen this village hall more crowded with residents. This room was filled. It went out there. It spilled out into the hallway. It was not a well-received concept. In that same round of development proposals, another person came in and said, I'm going to do like 16 townhomes. I'm going to do 30,000 square feet of retail. Completely different development, same property, same RFP bid, same whatever. They were proposing something totally different. So I don't know. There's a million different ways. Even if it was just said, okay, it has to be mixed use, has to be ground floor commercial, has to be three floors of residential. So let's say we said that. I still couldn't tell you what the impact would be of those because it'd be wildly different.
And my second, so there are going to be real people living there, and they're going to have kids. How is that? Has anything been done to ascertain what impact it's going to have on like the school district, on resources?
Raj, I'm going to step in. All of that would be done when we would look at the development. None of that's going to be done at this stage because we have no idea what the development's going to be. I mean, we have some idea given what's being proposed here.
I get your point, Kyler, but the point is once this ball starts rolling, it's rolling. I mean,
maybe I could jump in and I don't think that's accurate. Basically, I think the idea of this, and there's a lot of restrictions and a lot of hoops left to jump before any proposed development gets approved. The idea of changing zoning and is effectively to invite some proposals, not to automatically allow developments. It's to invite proposals. So if you're, so my background is I'm in retail development. I work with retailers and all over the country. So I work for JLL based here in Chicago. And so what I've seen over a 30-year career is developers look at certain areas and they consider whether it's even worth their time to spend some money to prepare a proposal. There's no guarantee of any approval, but it still costs money just to go through the steps of doing a rendering and marketing something and to try to attract interest and then bring it to a village to see if you can get it approved. If we're one of those villages that is a complete mystery, it limits the amount of development proposals that we will see.
So right.
And I'm a resident and I've lived here for over 20 years and don't plan on leaving soon. And I've heard a lot of the comments. I appreciate those comments a lot and have the same worries and fears about something that is out of fit for the village. But I do want to see things develop that we would all like. But we may never see those. We may see an empty Lutheran Social Services building just sit there for a decade. And we don't want that either, I think. So the idea of doing this is to attract proposals, not guarantee any kind of pre-approval or anything. It's just let's be a sort of more development friendly village.
And to your point, you make a good point about schools. I agree with everything Commissioner Walthall said. And to your point about school impact, that's a real thing. Absolutely, it is. And impact on village services, right? Infrastructure, water, utilities, stormwater runoff, police, fire, emergency response, all those. In the plan development approval packet and public hearing and neighborhood meeting and second public hearing, they have to address impact on village services. The development proposal is reviewed by every department in the village multiple times, including police, fire, and public works and water. The school reviews every proposal. The school district determines school impact, and they set that fee. The developer doesn't get to pick and choose. The school says, we've reviewed your development. We determined your impact to be X, pay X. So the school district determines that. So everything you mentioned, you're spot on. These are all legitimate concerns, 100%. But the River Forest has a very onerous review process and a very extensive submittal list. And everything you mentioned is a required submittal as part of the review before anything can get approved. So you're spot on. All those things have to be addressed, and they always are.
Yeah. And our job here, and the reason that we're looking at this zoning change again, is to modernize it to attract as many developers as we can so that we are then able to pick and choose what does best fit our wants and requirements and needs of the community that, that would address all the concerns that each development might cause. So they're absolutely solid concerns. It's what we're all worried about. And yeah, at any rate, does that answer your question?
Oh, my question?
Yes.
Actually, it didn't, but the impact that somebody who lives on 14 Ashland or 14 Lathrop or 14 the other street, Franklin, are much different from the concern that somebody lives on 1200 Ashland. Yeah. So I don't want to minimize what people have come up here and said today by just saying that we're all in this together, because it's the, you know, you wouldn't want a five-story building next to your house, Kyler, right? I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, you would be like, why are we doing this? So we need to put some more thought into this process before just saying, yeah, it's good. I mean, and all the work that you did is great. I'm not minimizing it. But we need to go back and think closely how it's going to impact people who live around there with the cul-de-sac, without the cul-de-sac.
Absolutely. Maybe we could talk offline too, because we understand your point and we understand the concerns. I don't want to say we as I'm speaking for everyone, but I know just based on the responses, absolutely understand those concerns. But again, that's not what we're being charged to do here. We're not being charged to approve a development here, right?
Right.
I mean, correct.
That's not our goal right here. It's to allow for, we're already making these variances to different developers. It's happening on every development that we do. And we're not getting a wide selection of different developments that would accommodate some of the requests of the people that live there or wherever they live in the community. We're not getting a lot of development offers because of our zoning. And we want to make sure that we're able to meet the needs of the community in the new developments. And we're not getting that now. So that's why we're modernizing. We're looking to modernize the zoning laws so that we are able to get more flexible and more charming community-friendly development offers here that would meet all the criteria that we all want. And it all does have to continue to go through all the review processes that John mentioned. It's a rigorous, I don't know if you've been a part of it. It's a very rigorous process, and voices will be heard, and it's great that voices are being heard and that community members, I don't know how many people are there, but that community members are being involved in letting people know what they think. I mean, that's what we need. That creates a vibrant community when voices are heard and understood. We're not getting the development that would meet anyone's criteria. And the result is going to be, we're going to have local developers that just know the area and want to do something here, or we're going to have properties that are going to sit dilapidated and cause the building that's there now, which no one wants.
Raj, I think I respect what you've said. You've basically gotten off towards what the village board's responsibilities are. But there's some fundamental issues that you can talk about parking. traffic studies, which I spent 8.5 years listening to too many traffic studies, which will tell you whatever you want to hear. And I know that sounds self-serving, but you can word the traffic studies to fit the application. But when you went, going back to the most fundamental thing, when you go to buy property anywhere and you are adjacent to or very close to commercial property, that should be in a decision-making process where you're going to see more traffic, more density, more noise. That's the nature of a commercial area. There, you can't change that. But so if you don't want to be near some of that, then don't invest in property, you know, right adjacent to or near it. But I do respect him. I just, as a point of order, are we open for public?
Not at the moment. If we could just let the commissioner speak at the moment.
And I'm probably been a resident here more than anybody else because I go back too far. And I really love River Forest, and I don't want to see anybody upset or hurt because of some development. But we're not going to get any development with our current rules. And knowing the process that it takes from the application, the development review board, all of the studies that go through months and months and months, and developers, that's money to them. And they don't want to waste their time. So we have to have something that's workable. And we have to be understanding of the residents. I mean, that's very important. And for the residents to show up, I respect that. But some of the things when you get into, is the traffic going to be this way or that way, all dependent on the nature of the, whatever the development is. I think some of these issues that we've got up here make a lot of sense. But I certainly want to hear some of the other commissioners offer some comments about, I mean, the parking situation, more people are driving less now, and all the trends are we're going to have less and less traffic for people on, who are doing working in whatever endeavors they're involved in. I don't see a problem with reducing the parking to maybe 1.25. The building height situation, no one wants taller property near you. I respect that and I understand that. But if we're never going to have any development, that it's going to be land that's just sitting there vacant and not being productive or beneficial to the community. And it's not all dollars and cents, but it's something that has to work. And we've certainly are aware of developers who, you know, want a certain height of property to make it economically viable. Otherwise, they'll say, forget it. It's not there. I have no problem with the height density change or height restrictions on North Avenue. The density issue certainly in that 1,000-foot range makes a lot more sense to be competitive in an economic market that developers will want to waste their time to come here. Otherwise, there's no reason to you know, get involved in a project they know that wouldn't work. They'll just walk away right away. I'm not going to let other people talk.
I just wanted to quickly check in. Is our goal here tonight to have a unanimous consensus from the commission that we would like to present these to the board, or what are next steps that we are moving toward? And I also heard loud and clear Ms. Chang's request that maybe we need more time to digest the feedback, and would like to propose that if that's how others maybe are feeling.
Sure. So the goal, I don't know if Tyler, you want to touch on this? Happy to speak. This is Matt.
Matt, go ahead. I've been talking about it.
Sure. So this is a discussion for the Economic Development Commission. It's really up to the Economic Development Commission to, if they want to take more time. Obviously, there's been some concerns shared by members and the public. There's not a specific deadline for this work to be done. I will say that this process has maybe gone longer than we had anticipated when we began, and the village board is interested in seeing consideration of these topics. So I'm not going to, we're not locking the doors to let it, people decide tonight. It's up to the commission. I think as long as we're showing progress towards working on these goals and discussing considerations, I know there's just a lot of topics that on the screen right now that John discussed, and it's been a few months since we discussed it as a group. And
I agree. Matt, I'd propose, you know, there was a lot that was mentioned and a really good feedback, really good discussion. I think there's a lot that we need to digest concerning this. And in the interest of time and the fact that I would not want to make a base decision on this, I think I motion that we shelve any vote until the next EDC meeting.
I think that's a good idea.
I agree.
Okay, so
there's a motion and a second. So if you want to do a voice vote, if you want, Kyler.
I motion it. Who second?
All for the vote.
Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed?
Yeah, I reiterate. We really do appreciate it. All the thoughtful comments, and they're going to be considered, and hopefully we can come to a conclusion that works for everyone here, or do the best we can, at least do what our commission's been asked to do. Hopefully we can do so to the best of our ability. I'm going to suggest, based on how long this took and in the interest of time and the fact that I don't want to be just about me, but I'm not even sure if Liz is around. I think we could skip number six at this point. Sometimes she might have left. I apologize for not being there tonight. I'll be at the next point. Yeah. Okay. So what? Any development updates or other business, or should we just move to adjournment and kind of pick this up at our next meeting? I'm not there, so I can't really feel the room right now. But happy to go with whatever people decide.
Are there any other development updates?
No.
Ladder.
No other development updates, Kyler.
Okay, great. Then with no other business, I move to adjourn the meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Okay. Great.
Motion passes. Meeting is adjourned.
Great. Thanks, everyone.